SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. It only took 28 race days. Day 29 of the Saratoga season. Day 29 of 40. And absolutely glorious. And it's going to more or less stay this way. For the next several days, we're not going to have to worry about off the turf and any other consideration on that front for the immediate future. And that's good because Saturday, now set in stone and in type and printed out. 35 pages was the official printout, by the way, that we we discussed yesterday. 35 pages printed out. The 13 race card for Travers Day and any number of just compelling matchups, and it all, I can't say it culminates because there is a race after the Travers. The Boston Spa will go as race 12, but certainly when it comes to the Glamour Division, the three-year-old boys, the highlight of the season. The Travers run for the 149th time, and everything that built up around, terrific. The stakes sequence, the grade ones, one after another. And I'll give you some of those details, by the way. There's three pick fours on the card. Races 2, 8, and 10 kick them off. And you have the all-stake group of races for the, not just for the pick four, but for the Naira pick five. The late pick four with all stakes, the Ballerina, the Forego, the Sword Dancer, and the Travers. The Naira Betts pick five that goes races 7 through 11, so you can add the personal ensign to that pick four. Outstanding. The pick six is all grade ones. Only happens on this kind of a day. And when you start to go through this, if you haven't had a chance yet, you're gonna be confronted with some very, very tough decisions. The Jerkins, the former King's Bishop. How many years do we have to... How long do you think...
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back. I don't know what happened there. That was a classic Spectrum ghost in the system. Anyway, back to the terrific card for Saturday, and started with the Jerkins, which promises fulfilled. Engage, Firenze Fire, of course, coming back out of that explosive win in the Dwyer. Still having fun. You're Woody Stevens' winner. He'll be the price to consider. How about Todd Pletcher and the Zayat team putting Jadu in here with a first-time dirt opportunity? Kind of interesting. Coming out of the Hall of Fame where he set the pace and got swamped late, but thought that was kind of interesting that the Jadoux turned up in here, and the rest, the Marcassi, Telekinesis, coming out of the Queen's Plate, coming from all kinds of crazy angles. So the Jerkin starts the grade ones, the personal ensign, Abel Tasman draws the rail, Chad Brown back with Peter Brandt's Wowcat, the Chilean Triple Crown winner that was certainly compromised late in the Shoe V. I think, she may be a terrific value coming into this, considering that Abel Tasman and Elate are going to get the money. She'll probably be third choice and very eligible in there. The Ballerina, the 7 furlong standard, and of course, really big part of the grade one sequence with the Jerkins, the Ballerina, and the Forgo, the 3/7/8 grade ones. And this came up kind of interesting, a little bit of the very familiar and hard-hitting types that have been tromping the filly and mare sprint category. Tecolita, Michael Matz, and Ivy Bell. Ivy Bell looks okay in here, cutting back, actually. She may be some value still there. Dane Kibiski comes to town. Carrie Ann, Graham Motion. Finley's Lucky Charm, of course, coming off the terrific performance in the Honorable Miss. Lewis Bay, the 5-year-old mare, been sidelined, not sidelined, but been away, not seen since the Better Roses. Marley's Freedom, Bob Baffert, and Baffert dots the card. Union Strike, first start under Steve Asmussen's care. Ruiz sent Union Strike to Asmussen after the Chicago Handicap start, and Highway Star, who came back and ran well in the Better Roses herself for Rodrigo Obillo and the Bromans. So the Ballerina, always good. The Forgo is a war, an absolute war. Limousine Liberal, Awesome Slew, Whitmore, Heartwood, No Dozing, CZ Rocket, Warriors Club, and City of Light draws the advantageous outside in the Forgo, going the 7/8. And that gives Errat Ortiz Jr., who picks up the mount. Drayden Van Dyke's been riding City of Light, recently signed up to stand at Lane's End. We discussed that yesterday with Sid. Came up. But the 8-hole, and coming off the try in the Gold Cup, where he was a good enough third to accelerate, but the Oaklawn Handicap win, the Triple Bend, I mean, versatile City of Light, turns back, and you get the idea that the Warrens and Michael McCarthy are kind of focused now. They've kind of made their decision, or at least in terms of the options. Doesn't feel like the 6-furlong Breeders' Cup sprint, but the Dirt Mile, the focus for City of Light. The Sword Dancer, always fun. And this one really has the usual suspects, and also a couple of emergent types. And then you had C-Eng that turns up in here for Aidan O'Brien. And, with Mendelsohn going in the Travers, C-Eng had originally, there had been some interest maybe in running him in the Travers, but he will return to the turf after the Pat Day Mile try and the Dwyer effort. Highland Sky came out of the stake yesterday and option for this, and might be a good decision. Certainly going to get the firm turf he likes. Saddler's Joy, outside, drawn outside. He does figure to get some pace to chase, and of course came running in the Bowling Green and just missed. So the Sword Dancer and the Travers, you already know the lineup and the expectations in here with Good Magic undoubtedly leading the parade. Good Magic and Tenfold, I suppose, and Catholic Boy, your three major entities, then the intriguing stories, Wonder Godot and Gronkowski, Bravazo and Vino Rosso, who have been dancing the dances, and I think either or eligible to make their presence felt. The Outsider, when I looked at this last night and again this morning, King Zachary And even though the Indiana Derby wasn't anticipated, you look back at that Matt Wynn. If he can get back to the race two back, and he certainly has been working nicely for this, King Zachary feels like the underneath price type. And then the Boston Spa, which has got heavy hands of the Chad Brown team, Kedura off limits. In here, a raving beauty, having just missed in the Diana to Sister Charlie, and Ultra Brat, an English bred Indian blessing. I guess you can't stop the rest of the world. You can't stop them from naming their horses some of the champions and some of the great runners from here. We can do the same, I guess. But Proctor's Ledge, the other player, of course, again in here, and she's generally run very well. She certainly never really lifted a kick foot at all in the Diana. So there's your stakes, and it is just a dynamite card. A lot of fun. And even the early portion, of course, you got a couple of maiden specials, you got allowances. Should be just a tremendous day. And we'll obviously touch on it. Jeremy Plonk's going to join us first. We'll talk to Jeremy. Get some, particularly some three-year-old thoughts, Travers and the Jerkins. Sean Clancy, it is New York Turf Riders Cup Handicap Day. So we'll get Sean's thoughts on that, as well as Travers and the meet in general. Of course, tomorrow, haven't had a chance to really look at it closely, but tomorrow, the New York Bred Showcase card. This looks okay. I didn't get to do the normal rundown because we lost a couple of minutes there, but we certainly got to get to some of the news stories, and you know, the story that obviously has got everybody talking. We'll get Tony Black to address it for the most part. But Tony Marat, as I suggested on Tuesday, was going to meet yesterday with the stewards. He's handed a 60-day suspension and a $1,000 fine for just the glaringly uncompetitive effort at Gulfstream on Sunday. And he just basically sat there, waved the stick maybe once, but didn't ride. And there's a bunch of fallout to it, and appropriately. You know, internationally, this always, you know, this always comes with a, you know, swift penalty, and these penalties, the 60 days and the 1,000, that's the max allowed under the Florida rules. But the effects will certainly linger, and this was a good for, you know, good for the stewards, and you know, for acting appropriately and quickly to address it. Aubrey Marat is sidelined and off the grounds as well, the trainer, until Gulfstream completes their investigation. And of course, they've got, you know, they've got their domain opportunity to, you know, met out whatever penalty they care to. So Tony'll talk about it. He's seen it and he's been following it too. So Tony's seen it all, so he certainly can address. The racing yesterday was a fun day. And if you played that pick six sequence, it was challenging, and you deserve to get paid. And when you had yet another Finger Lakes trainee win at the end of the day, well, $73,000 for the pick six hitters. We'll get to that as well. Let's take a quick break. Jeremy Plonk in town for the Travers. Talk to him next.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, and Jeremy Block's going to join us. A quick rundown of some of the things we were following into yesterday. Let me slip this in. Of course, Jacinto Vasquez resuming his training career. And Jacinto had not been feeling great, and he changed a health regimen. He's back, not just healthy, he's back getting on his horses. And that mortal storm that ran on Wednesday in the sixth ran okay. It was 4-1, was kind of a co-third choice, and finished fourth, beaten about five under Sammy Camacho. Just happy for Jacinto to get back and running. Some of those races that we had discussed, particularly with John Sadler and with Leo Powell, Kandura, a nice first-out winner, the Intermischief filly. For John Sadler and Team Hronas and Drayden Van Dyke, piling up the maiden winners. Dabster won that Brubaker. He ended up with a couple of scratches. Muptahish came out, as did Grecian Fire, so it went with four, and Dabster controlled things up front under Joe Talamo at about 70 cents on the dollar. Isotherm second, Ike Walker, who we talked to, not Ike Walker, Soy Fett, who we talked to with Powell. It's kind of just a meek fourth in here, but this was controlled on the front end by Dabster. There was also a nice maiden winner for Jerry Hollendorfer in West Point. going to have to go back, and I didn't see this race live. The second race, Van Dyke again, the Gunmetal Gray, and this colt looked okay going a mile. So there was your Del Mar action, and in Indiana, because we discussed it with Tom Amos, you had the two stakes, the Harrison and the Shelby County. The Shelby County, Dr. Gorham, Bob Gorham, with the amassed thoroughbred pass rush mare, Peyton's Pass. It was one of a handful of those Indiana events. And then you had the horse of Maggie Moss and Tom Amos. Sadavi, that we were following, went off at 11-1, really didn't get involved, kind of trailed early and never really mounted a charge. Somebody who did, though, was Operation Stevie under Manny Esquivel, and went off favored and had to come literally past them, almost all of them. Was 11th early, and for Cipriano Contreras, he owns this Lantana Mob gelding, 6-year-old, with Earl Trustad. So congratulations to everybody there, and wanted to slip those in. Now we'll get to Jeremy Plonk, and Jeremy standing by. He was on his way on Tuesday to Saratoga, Travers, and he's seen a bunch of them. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you. And I always feel good when I can name that tune on your bumper music. That was Move Out by Yaz. You brought that one off of one of my high school mixtapes. So it's always nice when I can identify your bumper music, because I usually can't.
Good job. I love it. Well, you've identified no shortage of sophomore trail winners. Enjoy the countdown to the crown, and now I suppose we're on to countdown to the Breeders' Cup, but there's still a couple of 3-year-old events, particularly Saturday and then in September, Parks, the Pennsylvania Derby, and even without the Triple Crown winner, and although we lost Hofburg in the last couple of days, this ended up being a very intriguing field.
Oh, it's a good field. There's depth. You have the filly, Wonder Cadote, in there. There's Pletcher. There's Chad Brown. There's a lot. You know, I mean, it's got the makings. It's got last year's 2-year-old champion. There's enough storylines in there to make it a very good race. Is it an all-time, an elite race without Justify? You can certainly make the point that it wouldn't be. But from a gambling standpoint, from multiple storyline standpoint, it's a very attractive race. It's a good race. It may not be a race for TV per se, without Justify so much. But for a simulcast feed and for the horse racing public, this race will have a voracious appetite with bettors over the weekend, probably more so than one that had Justify in it. So if there's any silver lining in that, if you're trying to pull something positive out of it, certainly from a gambling standpoint, things get much more attractive on Saturday. And that mile and a quarter, whether it's May or whether it's August, there's something about it that kind of makes everyone a little bit more uncertain about their horse. And so anytime you've got multiple uncertainties, as a bettor, you look at it and say, this is my chance. You know, if I'm going to beat this horse, it's because of the distance, or my horse will get the trip when others aren't so sure to be painted into the canoe this time because of the mile and a quarter. And I think that's kind of the case again, because I'm not sure Good Magic is a mile and a quarter horse. Chad Brown's not sure he's a mile and a quarter horse. The thing I keep going back to was before the Preakness. If you remember the interview with Chad Brown before the Preakness, why are you running in the Preakness on 2 weeks rest? He says, I'm definitely not running the Belmont. This horse is not a mile and a half horse. And honestly, I don't think he's a mile and a quarter horse, though he ran well in the Derby. So his best chance was the Preakness at a mile and 3/16. Well, here we are in August, and now Good Magic is a mile and a quarter horse? Or is he the best horse in the crop left, and the race happens to be a mile and a quarter? I don't think this is, like, the preferred spot for Good Magic to run a mile and a quarter. So if you're going to beat him at 2-1, 9-5, 8-5, whatever he turns out to be, the mile and a quarter would be the reason maybe to take a shot against him, and that kind of brings a lot of other horses into the fray.
Well, and talk about the other ones that, the ones that have you had the chance to, go through this and evaluate what kind of a pace picture we've got, because there is a nice there is a nice smattering of styles that should keep this race honest.
Yeah, it should be honest, but, you know, like, the burner-type horse isn't in the field. You know, we saw that in the Jim Dandy. There wasn't a burner pace. Throughout this entire crop, the one thing the Derby has kind of separated is the speed from the routers. With the point system, and it just kind of seems to have continued. If you look at the results of the some of the three-year-old races in the sprint rank, we're seeing less and less turn-back type horses win those races as well. So I kind of think that, you know, for the entire year, these horses are being separated for the most part. They might get that one shot. Promises Fulfilled gets one shot to show whether he's a router or a sprinter, that sort of thing like that. But they're being separated, and so I don't see, you know, where are the 7-furlong mile kind of horses in this year's Travers that just are assured to make it a fast pace? They don't exist in here. So where the pace comes from, I think, is a little bit mysterious. You know, Catholic Boy showed speed on the turf, but really had no speed at all on the main track. A Wonder Godot had speed against lesser competition, but when she was running against top flight competition, she was a 5-6-8 length closer. There isn't just, you know, Trigger Warning probably is the closest thing we have to confirmed speed. Went to the front in the Indiana Derby, was a former, you know, 5.5, 6-furlong type horse, and has the rail. And not to be insulting to the connections, but Trigger Warning would be considered what, you know, many would say would be cheap speed in this crop. Certainly a horse with some credentials hitting the board in the Indiana and Ohio Derbies, but, you know, for a horse that's been at Presque Isle and Sunland, now in the Travers, with the rail, with some questions certainly about going that far, I think cheap speed's probably, you know, maybe a bit of an insult, but at the same time, it's in that mold. And so Trigger Warning probably goes to the front in here, but it's not a very obvious and defined pace. There's a lot of horses who like to sit third. Bravazo, Good Magic, you know, they kind of have the same trips. Tenfold, when he runs his best, is usually kind of up in that same sort of spot. King Zachary won't be too far out of it, I wouldn't think. He should have more speed than he did at Indiana. I'm not sure why he got so far out of it there. You know, I don't know. Handicapping this race for pace for me would be difficult. I don't think you look at, like, a pace scenario and say, wow, it's set up for X. I think you got to look at this one from a little bit different viewpoint.
We certainly aren't going to argue the three-year-old champion, but what else, you know, what else in this group of three-year-olds do you – you know, do you see between now and Breeders' Cup? We obviously have got a Pennsylvania Derby to run. There's horses, there's three-year-olds that'll probably turn back and think about the dirt mile. There's even horses that'll may return to the turf. Catholic Boy, talk about, right, you know, where he stands right now.
Well, this is a good crossroads race in what you put out there. You know, there's three potential Breeders' Cup divisions for these horses, dirt mile, turf in some cases, and certainly the Classic. And, you know, it's a crossroads race for some of these horses. Mendelsohn, which horse is Mendelsohn, you know? Is he the horse who runs third in a Dwyer where outside of the distance he should have run better than that, obviously? Or is he the horse who, you know, made everybody's jaw drop in the UAE Derby? Which one is he? He could go a lot of different directions. Is Tenfold that late bloomer for Asmussen? You know, didn't debut until February. You know, wasn't forced into the Kentucky Derby because of the points and things like that. But is he the one who's kind of coming along for the second half of the season? Catholic Boy, you know, this is going to decide whether Catholic Boy becomes a turf horse or a dirt horse the rest of the way, right? I mean, they'll go back to the grass, obviously, if he's not an elite-level dirt horse. In the Travers. You know, Bravazo, we know what we have there. Vino Rosso, is he really a top-flight horse, or is he a horse that's just kind of okay? And I think he needs to, like, really step forward. So, Wonder Godot, is she the best in Canada, or is she a star filly on the rise? I mean, this is a really good three-year-old filly crop this year. Obviously, she wasn't as good as Monomoy Girl, but does that mean, you know, if Wonder Godot beats these boys, does that tell you, like, how awesome these three-year-old fillies are even more so than what we've seen when they race against one another? So this is a real crossroads race. And then finally, Gronkowski. Who is he? You know, I mean, he was almost the butt of the jokes, you know, because of the ownership and the name and things like that going into the Belmont Stakes. You know, he missed the Derby with the fever, and and waited for the Belmont. Nobody gave him any sort of thought process in the Kentucky Derby. In fact, if you go back in that, that great NBC Sports trailer footage of the crew, if you've seen that on YouTube or on the NBC Sports website, it takes you inside the production trailer when Justify's about ready to win the Triple Crown. And you see the head producer, Rob Hyland, laughing at Gronkowski, and he, like, laughs, like, in mid-stretch. Like, nobody could believe he was there, you know? And that was, like, we expected Justify to run that well, but Gronkowski's performance was a complete surprise. Which horse is he? Because if he's good enough to basically come off the plane, overcome the sickness, switch trainers from Noseda to Brown, and run that well on the Belmont Stakes, how good is he? You know, this is a crossroad race. It's going to tell us a lot about him. So there are a lot of horses that could go way north or way south after this one.
Well, in addition, Jeremy, you touched on Wonder Godot and the three-year-old fillies, and of course we're in the wake of the Travers of the Alabama, and I want to fold in some three-year-old filly discussion. But before we do that, talk about the way the Alan Jerkins came up, because we've got some horses that converted back to one turn on a more timely basis than we do sometimes. And Promises Fulfilled, obviously, and Firenze Fire, particularly, you know, they are the centerpiece of what is a really good Alan Jerkins.
It is. And this is one of my favorite races going back, you know, many, many years. I made the largest bet of my life at the time on a horse named Go Sapper, thinking that he couldn't lose the King's Bishop, and he came rallying and missed by less than a length, and he never lost another race again in the rest of his career. I was on him a race too soon and got nothing back out of it. You know, he's got a son in here, Telekinesis, by Go Sapper. Just another one of these intriguing type runners in here. Mark Cassie says Telekinesis is a future star. He just hasn't shown people yet. He is expecting a big performance. Maybe, you know, maybe this is his day. You know, Engage for Chad Brown's and Into Mischief. He won this race last year with Practical Joke, another son of Into Mischief. Promises Fulfilled was really good in the Amsterdam and the local prep. I've got a soft spot in my heart for Still Having Fun. A fun year with the Triple Crown Media League that we've been doing for about the last 20 years. Still Having Fun won the league for me this year because no one had Justify. We drafted before Justify a couple weeks before he ever debuted. So of the 15 media members drafting nationally with 10 people stables, no one had Justify. So that kind of ran out the clock. And Still Having Fun was on my roster. And his win,
that's funny.
His win in the Woody Stevens was what actually put me on top and beat Jude Felton and Mike Penna from HRRN, beat him by, I think, a single point. Because of Still Having Fun. So he was lucrative for me and certainly I was spot in my heart. He's a strong finisher. You know, that race and the Woody Stevens turned out to be, you know, prophetic, and that Promises Fulfilled and Engaged came back and ran 1-2 in the Amsterdam. So if you like their local performance, you've got Still Having Fun on a little bit more of a layoff. Or a really good horseman is Tim Keefe out of Maryland, who you know well. And, you know, Joel Rosario riding the big races still at a very high level. And I think Still Having Fun will be interesting in there trying to fly at the end, but it'll need a lot of pace. Firenze Fire's last race, of course, was a firestorm with all the late action that came in and the way he ran off and won. Who knows what you're going to get with him, right? I mean, the previous races before, he's beaten 23, 11, 9. So, I mean, he's beaten 43 lengths in the three previous races and then runs off the screen. If he repeats that effort from last time out in the Dwyer, of course, Firenze Fire, they're probably running for second if he runs that race again. But it's an interesting race. A lot of horses turning back. Didou switching distances. Funny Duck ran that race completely out of nowhere in the Pat Day Mile. This is kind of a real hit-or-miss kind of field. When they're on, and when they're off, they're really off. So from a betting standpoint, this will be cast a pretty wide net, I think, if you're playing the Jerkins and multi-race wagers. I'm going to try to kind of lean on that Amsterdam. I think Promises Fulfilled and Engaged are probably the two best options in this race, but there's a lot of different ways you can go.
It's a terrific group, and I got a feel for where I'm headed, but it's dangerous. It's a dangerous spot if you're going to try to, you know, get a heavy lean. I mean, you talk about Go Sapper. I think my the horse that I thought over the years wouldn't or couldn't lose was hard spun, and he, and of course, did win, and that was a one of those circumstances where there was a bonus involved, and I thought to myself, you know, they've got a grade one incentive as part of, you know, the stud deal, and this was his, it was his chance, and he, it was harrowing though. Right? He didn't, he maybe a neck or a head win, and I'm trying to think of who he beat.
Oh, hard spun, that would have been 2007.
Well, the internet will tell us. Again. Believe me, they'll, somebody will jump for it on Twitter and tell me in 3 seconds. Because but I remember, he had to fend off somebody late, or get
what
by
great
somebody
crop
late.
That was too, because I mean, you had Street Sense in there, of course, who won the Travers, and then, you know,
that's the best crop there is. It's in recent memory.
That 2007 was quite a group, you know, and that was the one that when things were really rolling with this 3-year-old crop earlier in the year, that's the one that everybody was kind of, myself included, saying, well, here's the measuring stick. Are they as good as that one? Are they as good as that one? They're still punching some of them, you know. I mean, we don't have Justify, but in some sense, if Justify just runs the table all the way through the year, people would say, well, Justify was just dominant and there was nothing that he was beating. The fact that he's gone now, do the horses who are like running second to Justify start winning all these races? Well, you saw Good Magic come back and win the Haskell, so that's a good thing. Tenfold ran really well, a third in the Preakness. He came back and won the Jim Dandy. Gronkowski, second in the Belmont. If Gronkowski comes back and wins the Travers, like all the major stakes would have been won by horses who were the closest pursuers to Justify, which would underscore this crop even more. If it's chaotic and they're like late bloomers coming in now and beating all the spring horses, then maybe you look at it and say, well, there wasn't that much behind Justify. But if all the horses were running their races and just not good enough to beat him, but now without him are winning the races that are left on the calendar, that's a good sign for this crop. And even without Justify the rest of the year, if you think this crop stacked up with an 07 or one of the better ones we've seen in the last several years, you want to see horses like that still winning. You want Good Magic. You want Gronkowski, Bravazo, Tenfold. These horses that have hit the board in the classics and were the main players throughout the Triple Crown series, if they remain the main players and take down a Breeders' Cup race or two along the way, that's really going to tell you that this was a really good crop. And that's the only way we're going to be able to measure it from now on.
Well, in fact, First Defense is who Hardspun was engaged fairly late and then did edge clear by a length and a half. But First Defense had grabbed him at the half mile and had put a head in front. And ultimately, winner. And he went off favored too, as it happens. Paid 460. Hardspun went off. I didn't remember him being that heavy a favorite. But frankly, with this field, Hardspun, First Defense, Easy Warrior, Tufflesburg, Most Distinguished, Bold Start, King of the Roxy.
King of the Roxy,
Pretty funny, Jeremy. Before we wrap, I asked you earlier this morning about your favorite Travers over the years, and bring us back to your favorite, and we're going to listen to it.
Well, 2001 Point Given had such a dominant run through the Belmont Stakes, you know, didn't get the Derby, but he was the horse going into the Derby, and got the Preakness, dominated the Belmont. We couldn't wait to see what he'd do that summer. I was working with the ESPN and ABC crews back then, and stats and research, and, you know, was honored enough to be there for his Haskell and then up through the Travers, and, you know, he ran out the rest of his career victorious, and he's just such a big, statuesque, monstrous horse who just delivered on the looks as well, and for me, that was a really memorable Travers, to be there in person to see him, you know, continue his streak through the second race of the Triple Crown and through what would turn out to be the final race of his career. But I would say Point Given's Travers was my favorite. Certainly the Dead Heat a couple years later, you know, with McPeak and McLaughlin was an interesting Travers. You know, it wasn't one of the strongest ones we've ever seen, but that was a fun one. But no doubt, I think Point Given, my favorite Travers, and one of the first ones I was at. Looking forward to being at another one on Saturday with the XBTV crew. I'll be up on the roof with Richie Migliori in the morning doing our weekend, our Saturday preview show of all the major stakes. So look forward to joining the MIG there and seeing another historic run, but Point Game is my favorite.
It's probably my favorite, too, along with Street Sense and Grasshopper. I talked about that yesterday, and we actually listened to it as well, but I absolutely agree. The Point Given Travers, which we didn't know at the time was going to be his last career start, but I had gone to the Haskell, and of course was at Preakness and Belmont, and it was my first Derby, and I had expected him. We've heard John White talk about this too. I think a lot of people expected Baffert. Thought he had a triple crown winner, and when he went on that parade of victories, I mean, the Haskell was the hardest fought of that sequence. You know, when he really, you know, Baffert was having trouble training him. He had the hoof issue. Baffert didn't make a lot of it at the time, but boy, the performances that we saw, Preakness, Belmont, Haskell, and Travers. Jeremy, we will see you there this week, and should be a tremendous day. Let's listen to the 2001 Travers. Tom Durkin, Point Given.
They're in the gates. And they're off. Off just a half step, slowly was Point Given. Free of Love has some early speed. On the outside, here comes Jerry Bailey with E. Dubai to lead the field under the line the first time. E. Dubai, a short lead. Free of Love, though, is right there with him. Down to his inside, running along in second. Just in behind, it's Point Given, who's three wide going into the turn. Dollar Bill kept in the far outside. A.P. Valentine ground saving toward the rail as the field moves around the clubhouse turn. And Free of Love leads the way now. It's Free of Love, the leader. E. Dubai backs off to run in second. A.P. Valentine third toward the inside. Point Given on the far outside runs along in fourth. Then in between horses, it's Scorpion out fifth by two. Harris Sand races in sixth. Dollar Bill in the clear on the outside. He's seventh now. And another 2.5 lengths back to Valpony, who settled in nicely near the back of the pack. The long shot trailer is Hadrian's Wall. The pace is a testing one here, 47 3/5 seconds. Free of Love shows the way, a narrow lead. E. Dubai and Point Given. Point Given, the Preakness and Belmont winner, looms large. He's third with 4.5 furlongs to go. A.P. Valentine, not far behind him. He's right there running with the pacemakers in fourth. Harrisand is fifth. And Dollar Bill is asked to pick it up now, and there he goes on the outside. Dollar Bill now advances to fifth as the field rounds the far turn. And it is E. Dubai, the leader, as they move toward the top of the stretch. Point Given, a menacing second as the field comes to the quarter pole. Dollar Bill and A.P. Valentine both in with a chance. Free of Love is down toward the inside, a weak in fifth as the field turns for home. It is E. Dubai in a full-out drive to hold off Point Given. Those two will come to the eighth pole together. It's nip and tuck with the furlong to go. A.P. Valentine and Dollar Bill. It is Point Given who has wrested a narrow lead. E. Dubai fights on but grudgingly gives way to Point Given. Point Given pulling away to win through the stretch by three, and no doubt about it, the king of the three-year-olds in North America today. Then it was E. Dubai and Dollar Bill.
Point Given's Preakness. Travers win. Gary Stevens, we've talked to Gary over the years about it as well, and you know, it's funny, you see A.P. Valentine in that lineup finishing fourth. You think back to the Breeders' Cup the previous year at Churchill. Falpony and his storyline, of course, evolves. Hadrian's Wall and Harrisand as well. Scorpion with Mark Guidry involved as well in that field of nine. 3:30 for Point Given that day, and boy, a huge crowd here, and that was a memorable afternoon, undoubtedly. Think back, we started work on the barbecue actually in 2001. Well, I appreciate Jeremy and his recollections. We'll get some Sean Clancy Travers thoughts as well, and I mentioned it is
New York Turf Writers Cup Handicap Day. So we haven't had a chance to talk to Sean during the meet. We had him on TV, and that's one of the things that made me think to get him. So Sean Clancy is going to join us. We'll also see what's going on in the special. They've been, as always, amazing all meet long. Sean and his brother Joe and Tom Law, the work they do on the special is remarkable, that they bang out a, you know, a full newspaper on a daily basis, nearly daily basis, and they work into the night, and every morning everybody around Saratoga and wherever you are, because you can go to thisishorseracing.com and enjoy it on a daily basis. Sean Clancy joins us, Saratoga special. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Beautiful day here in Saratoga. I'm sitting here on the Oklahoma track after the second break. Some action, some verve, some vibe. It's Travers Week. It's great.
Well, and finally, I started the show by mentioning that it only took 4.5 weeks for us to to get a day like today, but it was worth it, and it should be a nice all the way through the weekend.
Yeah, it's gorgeous today. I mean, it's just a perfect Saratoga morning. You know, back in the old days, you walk out, you grab a coat before you walked out the door. That seems like it doesn't happen as often as it once did. But today, I grabbed my jacket and walked out the door. So it's a good, proper Saratoga morning.
Well, and of course, we get to this point in the, quote, summer, and there'll be some mornings. Last year, there were some mornings in the high 30s. Nothing sets off the horses on the training track like a cool morning. You get some riders getting dumped and horses bucking and squealing.
Exactly. I actually ran the Kelly Wheeler, Gals Ready Keneally. I said, I still have those horses. I think about the ones that they were the last thing I thought about at night and the first thing I thought about in the morning, is ones that just stand there and wait for you. And when the temperature, she goes, yeah, and the temperature goes down 5 degrees, and we laugh. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of...
Exactly. Well, we're going to talk about what's coming up the weekend, and of course you and Joe and Tom Law getting ready for, I'm sure, you know, what'll be a hefty edition of the special. But ahead of the weekend, let's talk about today, because we certainly ended up with a turf course that should be absolutely perfect in terms of a little give in the ground and cut, the horses can dig their toes in. We've got a fun edition of the New York Turf Riders Cup Handicap, including Gordon Elliott invading.
Yeah, Gordon Elliott's brought two horses over from Ireland. Gordon Elliott would be the Todd Pletcher of Irish jump racing, European racing. He dominates in Ireland and England. Leading trainer at the Cheltenham Festival this year. Just a great trainer. He's brought two horses over. And both horses actually stay here. George Mahoney, Ross Bryan Farm, he's bought both horses, but they're under Gordon's care for today. That's the Game Changer, and a horse named Clark Ham. Clark Ham won the Galway Plate, which is a very prestigious chase. It's over the big steeplechase fences in Ireland. He won that on August 1st, 1/6, and has subsequently been sold to Ben Griswold and George Mahoney, and makes his first American start today. Very different today. I mean, that was 2 3/4 on heavy ground, or on soft ground. Today he gets 2 3/8 on, you know, much firmer turf course. But quality horse, 8-year-old veteran. He's made 46 starts over jumps, which is a crazy amount of starts, probably more starts than the rest of the horses combined, certainly the American-based horses other than most of the American horses. But it's an interesting aspect. I'm glad he came over. It sure adds some intrigue to the race. Should be a fun addition to the Turf Riders.
Sean, some thoughts about the domestic team that they encounter, the Elliott Invaders, and there actually is also the other first North American starter, Optimus Prime, that Rick Hendricks has got his hands on. But we've got you know, the top finishers coming out of the Smithwick, and you know, this is a little bit longer. How does that change the, you know, the approach or their perspective? Because I was intrigued by the distances that the two Elliott runners had been competing. In fact, when you talk about Clarkham had been running this kind of a distance, and Game Changer had been running closer to mostly 2 mile events.
Right, exactly. It's you know, I think even Gordon Elliott said that Clarkham's probably more suited to a race like Far Hills in the fall, where it's 2 5/8 up and down hills, won't be nearly as sharp as here, but still a quality horse. But he's been running 2 5/8, 2 3/4, those kind of trips. And the Game Changer, he's more of a 2 miler. His form's kind of tailed off. He did win going 2.5, but you know, his form, his last two races, he's pulled up and lost his rider. They take the blinkers off, add Lasix. You know, it's just an interesting pair of horses. They're solid, highly rated horses, and you know, if they take to it, they should run well. Standing in their way, obviously, is, as you mentioned, the Smithwick's starters. Show Court won it. Iranistan was second. Overwhelming was third. Personal Start was fourth. He's actually not running today. And all the way back to All the Way Jose was fifth in the race. So you get the four out of the first five finishers. I think Iranistan's probably the most intriguing one. I mean, he is a four-year-old for Jonathan Shepherd. Shepherd decided he opted against going the easy route, running this horse against novices, and decided to take on the big hitters here in the grade one. I mean, he could have run in yesterday's novice stake. Instead, he comes here. And that's pretty, you know, Shepherd's, you know, when he has a good one, he's bold. And so he's taking another shot with Iranistan. Iranistan won his first three starts this spring, finished second in the Smithwick. It was a little bit of a different type of a race for him. He's always been on the bridle pulling. Smithwick, he actually settled a little bit. And you know, I think he needs to settle again. Which he should. You know, I think he's learned. I talked to Jonathan yesterday. So he's improved with each start, kind of learned how to do it. He was really erratic over his first couple, but he was pretty polished in the Smithwick. So if he takes a step forward, which Jonathan thinks he will, he should be tough today.
A couple of other storylines coming out of here. We go back to the Smithwick and the great week that Arch Kingsley had. Show Court in here, and certainly Mitchell has distinguished himself the last couple of summers, and not just during the summer, of course, but you know, really a powerful force in the irons on the jump circuit.
Yeah, Mikey Mitchell's an interesting kid. He grew up in England, went to New Zealand and Australia, rode races over there, and then he's kind of on his world tour, came back through America, and he's been here for several seasons. He's won two races already at the meet, and he's undefeated on Show Court. He really rides him well. The only negative with Show Court, 2 1/16 is probably more his distance than 2 3/8, and I think he runs better fresh. He was pretty fresh the other day in the Smithwick and won nicely. I mean, he was surprised that he was 14-1 that day. But he should run well. I mean, if he gets a trip, Mike has kind of a nice style to get him to settle. I just don't, you know, he's just not quite as potent going 2 3/8 as he was 2 1/16. He picks up a little weight from the Smithwick win. Still a nice horse. Arch Kingsley's been firing all meet. He's certainly live. I mean, if the Irish horses don't take to it and Iranistan doesn't step forward, then Show Court certainly could win it.
The 15-1 on new member looks awfully inviting, no?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what price he goes off at. You know, he's an interesting horse. Jack Fisher trains him. It took him a long time to get through the novice condition over here. He's always running well, but finally got through it up here earlier in the meet in the John and Kaiser. They put blinkers on him for that. I think that improved him. Certainly a racetrack horse. You know, he's definitely a type of horse you could use, certainly in exotics, if you want to try to get a little value. I don't know what price he'll go off at. It'd be interesting to see. He's probably in that, you know, certainly in England and Ireland, he's a notch below, you know, or several notches below Clarkham and these type horses, but he has improved. I thought his race up here was pretty strong in the Kaiser.
If he moves forward off of that, Jack Fisher's always good. You know, he's probably 10-time champion trainer, so he's hard to discount in any race.
Well, the other grade one of the season, the New York Turf Riders handicap, we talked to Bill Gallo on Tuesday leading into the week. Things worked out quite well when it came to the course and the weather, and we look forward to the 2 mile and 3/8 New York Turf Riders Cup handicap, and that we still have one more race next week after this, and then things return downstate and look toward Belmont and the Lonesome Glory and Far Hills, and the rest of the season. That'll determine, seems like once again we're kind of looking for a champion to stamp themselves between now and New Jersey.
Yeah, for sure. It's an open group right now. You know, the big three, the Turf Riders, the Lonesome Glory, and the Grand National of Far Hills. So, you know, the championship's certainly open for anybody who wants to step forward. You know, it's going to be different, too. You know, the Turf Riders goes 2 3/8, the Lonesome Glory is 2.5, and the Grand National is 2 5/8. So you start getting a little bit of a different type horse that thrives at these distances. So, it'll be interesting to see who steps up. I mean, it could be a horse like Iranistan. I mean, maybe today's his breakout day, or even all the way Jose for Shepherd's, a quality old veteran who will improve certainly 2 3/8 and these other distances as they go farther. And horses like Clark Ham and Optimus Prime and there's horse Zanjabil won the Iroquois. He took the summer off. He'll show up this fall. So it's a great group of horses. There's no standouts, but it's a solid group of graded stakes horses, and certainly looking for somebody to take the helm as the leader of the group.
Well, we're looking for some standouts amongst the rest of the three-year-old males, Sean, and the Travers on Saturday. Justify has moved on toward a second career and leaves us with an intriguing group. We couldn't get Hofburg. I think a lot of people, you know, were waiting, you know, for that opportunity, especially, you know, after the perfect lead in with the way the curling went for him, and it seemed like the Judd Mott team were poised with Hofburg. But where do we look with Good Magic leading them in to the Travers on Saturday?
You know, it's a fascinating group. I mean, when you think about it, like you just said, you know, you lose Justify, Hofburg in here, and it's still, you still go really deep. And I think it's the same type of thing. You're kind of looking for a horse to step up and take the helm now that Justifies, you know, not in the picture. I mean, I don't have a strong opinion. I always have a strong opinion even when it's wrong. I think this is really tricky. You got the likes of Gronkowski, the filly Wonder Godot. You got Tenfold, who won the Jim Dandy, of Captain Boy going back to the dirt. Good Magic, obviously Haskell winner. It's got a step forward going 1.25 miles. Mendelsohn comes back again. You know, it's hard to keep kind of being in his corner after two losses on the dirt, but he's certainly intriguing that they come back for a third time. It's just a fascinating race. You know, 1.25 miles separates them. I don't know. I don't really have a strong opinion. I'm going to just kind of sit back and watch it, I think.
Well, we look forward not just to Travers, but the rest of what is a tremendous day. And card came up as expected. Any other thoughts from what you've seen? What other intriguing lines, storylines do you anticipate? You got you and Tom and Joe and the team can write about for Saturday's banner edition.
It's some great racing. I mean, the bottom line is a great banner card with stellar horses. I'm looking forward to still having fun. My great friend Tim Keefe bringing him back up for the Alan Jerkins, which is exciting. I mean, I think the personal ensign's a fascinating race with Elate and Abel Tasman squaring off, anxious to see a late train. She's trained great here, anxious to see her run. Ballerina's deep. Love to see Brett Calhoun win another one with Finley's Lucky Charm. And, you know, you go to the four go, which is, I mean, that, talk about a deep race. You got Whitmore, Lindsay Liberal, those type of horses. No Dozing, who I cashed on first earlier in the meet. CZ Rocket, and that's a deep race. Sword Dancer is always a fun race. Spring Quality skips a race at Arlington. He comes back here. Some of the other horses that didn't maybe thrive in the soft ground, the Bowling Green, they get their firm turf this time. Sadler's Joy trying to come back as a terrible post, but interesting horse. Then you got the Travers, and then, you know, the end the card, you got the Boston Spa. So just a great day racing.
Sean, we've had an interesting summer, and the weather obviously, you know, impacted things overall, certainly, you know, from a handle standpoint. I can tell that the horse players and connections too are frustrated with, you know, some of the things that, you know, we've had to deal with when you get all these off the turf races. You know, you try to prepare a horse for a start, and, you know, then you either scratch or you go ahead and run just because you don't know when you're going to get another opportunity. But there's certainly been some really winning moments, and, you know, you write about them on the fly every night. And, you know, we think about John Hertler's win, for example, and, you know, you're always finding something to that's moving and positive about the experiences here. We obviously have got plenty more racing to come, but some thoughts with 11 race days yet to go about what we've enjoyed the most this summer.
I mean, I touched upon it with you and Seth on the TV the other day. I think this year, you know, sure, you get a little, it's a little bit, I can get a little dull as some of the big trainers win a lot of the races. But when you stop and think of the guys that have stepped up and won big races up here, stakes and just other races, certainly John Hertler is just one of the great feel good stories of our game. From these hard working guys that overcomes more than the rest of us. He overcomes more in a day than the rest of us overcome in a lifetime. And to see him win a race, to see the other little guys, you know, Barkley Tag, Louis Carvajal, Chuck Lawrence, I mean, guys winning stakes, and that's just to start the list. There's been a bunch of interesting people that we didn't really know a lot about. That, you know, for us as writers, those are the stories you want. We always say root for chaos just because there's better stories. So we're always rooting for chaos. So I think it's been a really fascinating meet, and I think it's important to recognize when trainers come up here and do well at Saratoga with little stables, you have to remember that, you know, this is about the only stake horse they have, the only stake horse that could come to Saratoga and win a stakes, and they want it, as opposed to some of these other guys that win stakes with, you know, a pool of horses. They might have 10 stake horses for the race. You know, you'd stop and think about Louis Carvajal and Chuck Lawrence and guys, and that was the only horse they had for that stake, the only horse that could win a stake like that. And I think in this day and age, you got to stop and remember that there's a lot of trainers out there, a lot of capable guys that don't necessarily get the chance. And I think Saratoga's proved that again. It's part of the reason why we started this special in kind of a romantic way all the way back in 2001. I was up here. I'm a reader. I love reading and I love racing, and I couldn't find anything to read about the stories that happen every day. You go to the races every day and see these just magical moments from guys like John Hertler of 20 years ago, and you'd see those, and I'd get up every day and try to read about it. I couldn't find anything, and Joe and I got fired up. I was like, man, we need a daily racing paper at Saratoga to tell these stories. I'm getting romantic and, you know, probably overdoing it. But I think in our game, I think it's the most important thing to remember those stories, to highlight those stories, to talk about them, to put people to tell the stories about the horses and the trainers, the jockeys, the owners, the grooms, the hot walkers. We've written about the gate crew. We've written about all the little guys and all the great parts of this game. And I think that's just the essence of Saratoga. And I think this year's meet has proven that yet again over with a list of trainers that have won stakes and other big races at the meet. It's the absolute essence of Saratoga.
Absolutely. And you can read about it every almost every day during the meet, and lots of great coverage yet to come. The Saratoga special, you get to it on This Is Racing, This Is Horseracing.com. You follow Sean, who changed his moniker after literally being the Saratoga special. He separated himself, which probably was a good move.
Somehow we had an executive meeting and I lost my Twitter handle. I don't know how it happened.
That's pretty funny. Because I wondered, I didn't ask you about that, but the Saratoga special is now a standalone. It's got its own moniker. And by Sean Clancy, using the byline. Why not?
Yeah, there you go. By Sean Clancy.
I love it. Sean, thanks so much. And, of course, the coverage is just invaluable, quintessential. It, you know, we think of all the years of, you know, people sitting on hotel patio over the years reading the form, and somewhat been supplanted in this digital age by people sitting reading the Saratoga special. And it really is Saratoga encapsulated on a daily basis. Congratulations on another great season.
Thank you. Thanks for everything, Steve, and I appreciate all the time and the effort and passion you put in the game, and we just got to keep it rolling.
Absolutely. Sean Clancy, everybody, if you somehow lost your following of Sean because of the name change, make sure you follow by Sean Clancy and Tom Law as well, of course, and Sean's brother Joe. This is horseracing.com, Saratoga special. Let's take a break. A little past the top of the hour, Tony Black is going to join us. And Tony, I'll give him the reins, give him the leg up, and he'll discuss, frankly, the Tony Mara suspension and what transpired. And he said he's got some personal reflection and experience understanding, you know, whether it's the motivations or the sort of excuse that they're trying to use regarding what justification Tony Mara has come up with regarding, you know, not persevering with the horse. And I'll let Tony, no better person to consider this and give you some insight. Steve Askin as well. We'll dive into more Travers angles with Steve, see where he shakes out. See what, I'm curious now that I think, I don't know if I've ever asked Haskin for his favorite Travers. It'll be interesting. He's certainly seen enough of them. Back after this, Tony Black.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade 2 $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free t-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.